Hi, I'm Wendy Gerbach. I'm the program director of our adolescent and young adult program here at UT MD Anderson. I'm here today with Hannah Kahn, who's a survivor of astrocytoma, and this is the CancerWise podcast. Welcome, Hannah. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So today on this episode, we're going to talk about survivorship. And so I would love to hear a little bit about your perspective as a survivor. Probably a good place to start is just tell me a little bit about your experience, diagnosis, whatever you want to include.
Okay. Well, I'll start off of how grateful I am to be a patient at MD Anderson. I just love being here. And I was telling some family members earlier in the week that I just feel happy walking around the halls. And that's probably crazy for like a cancer patient to say. But it's just more of like that comfort of feeling that I'm getting treated here and just the comfort and relief of knowing that I'm in the best of good hands here.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what the staff obviously tried to do. Yeah. So I love that that's been your experience. Do you feel like you're the only one probably walking the halls
probably,
like that?
Probably, because I feel like I'm the youngest one walking around here. And I kind of like wearing the wristband to be like, I'm the patient. Yeah. It's me, not my parent.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. So okay. Tell me a little bit about your diagnosis. How did you get to MD Anderson? What was your treatment like?
So I'm a very open book, especially when I'm here too, talking about this. I'm a very active individual. I was one to never really get sick, especially the flu, fever. I never really was home from school growing up to be sick.
Yeah.
So it was February 9th when I got diagnosed. If I want to count that day as my true diagnosis day.
Yeah.
It was a normal day. It was a Saturday. I ran 10 miles that morning.
Wow.
I was training for a half marathon in Atlanta. That's why I'm like so active too.
Yeah, I was like, that's very active. Yes.
Ran my normal errands. Then my husband and I went to dinner with friends. That night around 12:30 on February 9th is when I had a seizure. Never had headaches or anything. I don't really remember like how I woke up. I just remember it was 12:30 at night. My husband goes, you just had a seizure. I'm like, what?
Wow. And you've never had one before.
No.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean I had a seizure?
Yeah.
And then he's on the phone. Like, he already called 911 at that point.
I'm sure he was so scared.
He was so scared. Also, we just got married 2 months prior to all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's talk about, like, in sickness and in health.
Right.
Like, really fast.
Like, the vows are coming into play here. Yeah.
Exactly. And he called my parents, and my dad was like, you're going to the hospital, because I was just like, I'm fine. Like, I don't need to go, because you're just kind of like, what just happened? And you don't even remember that it happened.
Like, I'm young. I'm healthy. Exactly. I just ran 10 miles this morning.
Exactly.
There's no way this is serious.
So we went to the ER. They ran a CT scan, an MRI scan. And this is all like 2, 3, 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Then they call the on-call neurosurgeon. He comes in around 6 a.m. My parents are on speakerphone the whole time. Because they're here. I'm originally from Alabama.
Okay.
In 2019, my parents moved here.
Okay.
And luckily, the on-call neurosurgeon said, you need surgery, but it's not emergency surgery.
Okay.
There's a mass in your head. I'm just like, what?
Whew, yeah.
Also, I've never had surgery. Yeah. I never broken a bone. The worst I've ever done was I had to get stitches.
Wow.
So I'm just like, what is going on? This is not me.
Yeah, it's like surreal.
Yeah. So after that, we were like, oh, do you have any other surgeons you recommend to get a second opinion? He was like, absolutely. So he made an appointment for us, like got us the first available, which was my birthday, February 11th on a Tuesday.
Ouch, yeah.
So I'm walking the halls in that hospital. I'm just like, never thought I would be seeing a neurosurgeon on my birthday.
I was like, much less right after your wedding, on your birthday as a young, healthy person.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm just like, what is going on? So we also had an appointment with that same on-call neurosurgeon that Thursday, but we all knew deep down we were going to come here.
Yeah. And good for y'all for getting a second opinion.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, I think, just get in this, okay, we saw this doctor, we have to do this, we're moving forward, instead of let's look at the options, let's just confirm what the best treatment plan is, and then in the end, you know, you got here.
So I flew here on February 18th for 4 months. At that point, I did not know I was going to be here for that long.
Yeah.
I remember my mom saying, pack clothes for springtime.
Wow.
You're also in winter.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what?
Yeah. So you just came here thinking, I'll pack up and I'll be there for a while.
Yeah.
And so then what other services or what, I guess, chemo, radiation, like any other people you saw?
So I had surgery first, then radiation.
Okay.
Then now I'm during chemo.
Okay.
And then on top of that, I did the whole egg retrieval.
Okay, yeah.
Which is something like people don't really talk about when you are a young cancer patient.
Yeah, so definitely let's talk about it. Yeah. So how did that come up? And then what was the resulting outcome?
I've always wanted to do it. But at the same time, I was like, oh, it's so expensive. Don't know what that looks like. Because my husband and I just got married and we're in our early 30s, which we still are.
Yeah.
We're still young.
Yeah.
But I was like, we're not in no rush to have kids at this point. Like right after we got married, like before all this, we were just more of like, let's just live our best life. And maybe in like 5 years, but yeah, realistically, that's 37. We're like, well, we'll try.
Right.
So I've always wanted to do an egg retrieval.
Okay.
And then perks of having cancer.
Yeah. And so
all
did
this happen.
So they mentioned it to you or did you mention it to them? How did it come up?
Both.
Okay.
So I remember after my surgery, I was starting to get all these calls from the AYA center.
Okay. Very good. Yeah.
Connecting me to the young adult part of cancer.
Yeah.
And then they offered those services.
Okay. Yeah. So you got seen in the AYA clinic. Mm-hmm. They referred you probably to one of our reproductive endocrinologists, yes, Dr. Lori McKenzie, who's amazing.
She's awesome.
And so then she helped you go through process A to Z. And so how did that go?
I mean, I was overwhelmed at first, yeah, because I was just like, this is so much. Like, I'm still recovering from brain surgery. I have to go through another procedure. But, I mean, let me just say, egg retrieval is the most wild thing.
Yeah.
They send you a whole box of needles, and you're just – and I have no medical background.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? I'm supposed to put all this together?
And I think it's particularly just crazy for cancer patients,
yeah,
because IVF and egg retrieval in general, it's just kind of a long process. And mm-hmm, it's a lot of medications and tests and appointments. But especially when you're up against a cancer treatment timeline, they're really trying
to
stimulate
to
you quickly and as quickly as possible to get as many eggs as possible. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of just extra side effects that come with that.
Exactly.
And so I think, again, like at this young age, you know, people in their early 30s definitely might be thinking about starting mm-hmm a family or like planning for like that's in a few years or we're not there yet. And now it's like, no, you have to plan now. Like,
yeah,
you have to do this now before the next step. Did that impact you in any way or was it just kind of part of the bigger plan anyway? So it wasn't
part
anything
of the
different.
Bigger plan,
okay.
Anyways, I wanted to fertilize the eggs because I knew because I'm married and like my husband was with me. So I knew it's going to be both of ours.
Yeah.
But he was also so overwhelmed with the whole process. So he was just like, no, I can't think like that far in advance.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the challenges upon diagnosis is you do have so much information
so
being
much
thrown at you. It's the diagnosis. It's the treatment plan. Mm-hmm. It's the side effects. It's the prognosis. And then especially for young adults, it's work and school. It's your relationships, your marriage. Some mm-hmm people are still dating. It's the friendships. It's the family planning. It's the even just mental, emotional sort of aspect of planning all of these things mm-hmm while you're also planning a lot in your life. It's
yeah
like life is busy anyway,
yeah,
and then you add all of these layers on top of that. Will you talk about that experience a little bit of what it was like to kind of juggle all of those different mm-hmm aspects and what that felt like?
I would say like I'm lucky to have friends that have gone through the process, so I didn't feel truly alone during that. And then even my first day of injections, I had one of my best friends on FaceTime showing me, because she had leftover needles from hers,
yeah,
showing me how like to mix the needles. And
yep,
she even watched my first injection and she was just cheering us on,
yeah,
just to make sure. And even my friends during that 2 week process, they were all just checking in to make sure I was okay and just everything. And I'll say like I've truly felt the love during this whole entire journey with cancer, but the whole egg retrieval, I truly felt it.
Yeah.
I didn't feel alone.
Obviously, you said earlier, you're an open book, and so you felt yeah comfortable sharing that, which I think is probably helps make you feel more supported mm-hmm because then people know what you're going through, then they have the opportunity to support you.
Yeah.
And I know you're pretty active on social media, so tell me how that came into play after your diagnosis in terms of connecting, getting support from people.
So I kind of waited till, I don't know why I waited till May 1st, and like May is Brain Tumor Awareness
okay
Month. And I think that's why I wanted to like make my post in May to be like, kick it off.
Yep. And
you know, like say hello to the world and
started
say, this is
big
what's going on. Even though like people knew what was going on, but I wasn't very open about it, how I am now. But with me posting, I actually got connected with someone who went to the same college as me. I went to Alabama, Roll Tide.
Yeah.
I immediately felt a sense of relief just like having someone who walked in those shoes.
Yeah.
But also I was connecting to other cancer patients, the whole mentality of we're all going through the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's a different type. we all understand on that level.
Yeah.
But other people can't understand.
Right, exactly. Because kind of what you were saying earlier is so many young adults feel like they're the only young one of that age group. It's either you're the oldest one in the waiting room or the youngest one. And so it is nice to be able to connect with other people your age, whether it's the same cancer or not, same treatment or not, whether you live in the same state or not. Sometimes it is just nice to have other people that like look like you and feel like you to kind of connect with, whether or not it's exactly the same.
Yeah, because I also don't scream stereotypical cancer patient too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's another really important topic is that it's the perception of what people see. So there's this stereotype of what a typical cancer patient looks like. And so it's not typically someone that's younger, that has hair, that is active, that's laughing and joking and still going out and spending time with family and friends. Yeah. Like it's very much a different picture. And so that's probably not what people assume. Yeah. And even though sometimes, yes, you may feel great and look good and have a great attitude, but also you can still be struggling with fatigue or anxiety or just healing, your scars hurt. Like there are just so many physical side effects.
Or even the hair
treatment.
Growth. Like, yeah, I look like I have hair, but underneath I lost majority of my hair with radiation. So I'm in that hair growth stage.
The awkward grow out.
And that's why I'm wearing the headband because it's like, I call it my toddler hair, that the hair just pops out like this and I have to glue it down or even wear a headband.
Yeah. And it's hard because when people see you with who don't know you, they probably just think, oh, she's so cute. Like, that looks great. They don't know that that doesn't feel like you, that when you look in the mirror, this isn't you, or in whether you hate it or not, but just like, that is not you to you. Whereas people who don't know you feel like that's just Hannah. I met this girl. She was so great. She had so much energy about her. Like, I really liked her energy. And so they just don't know that it doesn't feel like you. And there's such a disconnect sometimes between what people assume when they look at someone versus what's really going on underneath.
Even have to like be vocal, especially to my husband, because he'll see me days when I'm feeling good. I'll go to SoulCycle, which I call my physical therapy.
Because
it feels like physical therapy. When you're in
very
that room.
Difficult, yeah.
Very difficult, but like it just feels like very therapeutic in the room. And then I'll be laying on the couch the next day and he's just like, wait, but you were just went to spin class yesterday. I'm like, yeah, but I'm exhausted today.
Yeah.
Or maybe hours later it'll hit me too. And I'm like, yeah, I don't feel like doing anything.
I'm sure it's also nice you go to a class because then you're also, again, connected with people. Yeah. So like you're getting that physical activity. You feel like you're accomplishing something. It feels motivating and you're able to just be in person like with other people and connect, which it sounds like for you it's also a really just important thing is to feel connected and supported.
Yeah. And I even think the instructors know about me too. So like one time I did it like right after chemo just because I just wanted to move my body. And I told the instructors, I'm like, I'm just here to move. Yep. I'm not giving you 100% today. Yeah. I just finished chemo. I'm just here.
Like,
she's like,
I showed up.
She's like, I don't care. I'm just happy if people are here.
Yeah. It's like, I just showed up. You can sit you could just sit. And like, it just is nice that you showed up and like your brain is thinking about spinning, you know, it's so nice. But so I think something you touched on earlier was the connection and the social support. And one thing I hear from patients a lot is that even when they have very solid support systems, they have great family, they have great friends, they have great colleagues, and like A+, they get a lot of support, they still feel like there's so much benefit in having their cancer friends because they just get it. Has that been your experience?
Oh my God, for sure. Because I also connected with a girl who's my age with a different type of cancer. And like we talk also about like, oh, I'm so tired, I'm exhausted. Just the things that people don't understand. My family understands, but like it's not the mental part.
Yeah. They understand, they empathize, they love you, they support you, like whatever they can do to help, absolutely. Yeah. And there's just nothing comparable unless you have been through it.
Exactly.
And so I think patients often say that their cancer friends are the ones who don't feel the need to fix it either. Mm-hmm. When you just say like, I'm tired, they're like, yep.
Yeah.
That kind of day. What are you doing?
Or I'm like, brain fog. I walked into a room. I don't know why I'm there.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, me too. You know, same. Just it's like there's no judgment about it. There's no fixing. They just kind of allow it to be what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that can be so valuable and something that really can come out of social media, right? Like sometimes we see the downsides of it, but there are definite upsides of when you do share your story, you do get to connect with people. And I imagine the people in your comment section are probably then connecting with each other.
Yeah.
And they'll see like, oh, I saw this person on this one page, or I came across this girl and she mentioned this thing and then I followed them. And so it just inevitably kind of creates this community.
Yeah. And then I also like been seeing other Instagram accounts that are dedicated to cancer patients.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, yes, I love this because they'll post a million memes.
Yes.
And like even this one I hate to call her an influencer, but her content is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is a mind of a survivor, or this is a mind of someone going through treatment. And the things that she says is so spot on. And even friendships, you may lose some friends, because I have noticed like some friends may constantly be inviting me to places and I just can't go because I'm either exhausted or doing chemo or I'm here. Then they kind of just stop inviting.
Right.
And like she even like put that out there too of like, you know who your real friends are, the ones that are still with you.
And that is kind of an aspect of cancer that doesn't often get talked about also is, even when you do have friends who let's just say they mean really well and they want to help and they invite you for a while and then they think, well, I don't want to bother Hannah.
Right.
So I'm just going to like let her be. I don't want to be a bother. And so then they just fade and fade and fade. And I hear this a lot, especially when people finish treatment, is that like during treatment or like when the surgery is planned and they need someone in the waiting room or people are delivering things or offering food, whatever, right in that acute phase. But then as they get further and further from that acute treatment, just it kind of fades out because people just assume, well, she must be doing fine. She's good. Like the surgery's over and or the radiation's over. And so she probably doesn't need that much. I'm not going to bother her.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, sometimes it's when like you need people the most or when you really want to connect and actually realize, no, I was in the weeds then and I didn't know what I was going through. Now I know what I'm going through and I want to talk about it. When people talk to you about what your cancer experience was, so what do you feel like kind of the tenets were? So you mentioned like fertility, planning for that, social connection, the social media.
Yeah.
And you've also mentioned staying active. So like, were those kind of the things that were really important to
for
you?
For sure. My biggest thing is after my seizure, just before my surgery, I'm like, will I be able to run again? So I've, backstory of me, I've done 4 full marathons.
Wow.
17 half marathons. That's why I'm like, what? I have
incredible.
Cancer.
Yes. Then what was it like physically to go through all of this? Were you able to still run? Like, what was your activity level?
So after surgery, at my 2-week follow-up with my surgeon, they said I can run again, but just make sure I have water, like very light runs. And where my parents live, there's not much shade over there. So I didn't feel that comfortable running out over there. We just did a lot of walking.
Yeah.
When I started radiation, we stayed in a housing situation.
Okay.
I felt more comfortable running over here because there's a lot more shade.
Yeah.
So I felt comfortable like trying to run again. So my goal was to run 1 mile, then walk 2 or 3 miles.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And it sounds like your team really encouraged you to do what was right for you.
Yeah.
So, and I think there's this spectrum, right, of you're used to being active. So being active feels good to your body. It's like you almost need it, I feel like, is what people will say. Especially like if you're running marathons, like you're used to a lot of activity. And so if someone had told you like, no, do nothing, like that would be so probably hard. Mentally and physically really difficult, because it's also probably a coping mechanism. And so there is this ability of be active, like push yourself a little bit, get out there, do some walks, you did all the safety kind of planning around it, but do some activity. But then also, were there times, and I don't know if this happened after radiation or even now in chemotherapy, where it feels like, okay, no, today I need to rest. Like there's a kind of a balance.
I definitely feel that with chemo, not with radiation. I felt no fatigue with radiation.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
I was fine because I worked out.
Yeah.
And that's a major factor too. But with chemo, there's days I just lay on the couch, but I know my body's recovering. And I've really learned the lesson of listen to your body.
And I think that's the important part of, yes, push sometimes.
Yes.
But it is important to know, because your body is working very hard to heal itself. Mm-hmm. And so it is important to rest and take care of yourself. And there's just this like wide spectrum of kind of having to know your body. And
that's one of the topics I covered with my therapist. She's like, yes, you are on the couch chilling, but your body's doing so much. So like you are being active without being active.
Absolutely. And so you got connected to her through AYA, right? Mm-hmm. She's one of our AYA therapists.
Yes.
Awesome.
She's awesome.
So what got you interested in, I need to tackle my mental health in this and make sure I'm covered?
Maybe because like everything was just so like, oh my gosh, I'm going through cancer. Maybe to talk to someone who is trained to talk to cancer patients.
Yeah.
Because there are things I think about when I'm not here, when I'm back at home. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to ask her about this.
Yeah.
I need to talk to her about this situation.
Yeah. And it's just a normal, like, I just need to run this by someone.
Yeah.
And I feel like it can be such a protective factor. Like, I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I have to wait until I feel really terrible before yeah. I go see a therapist or a counselor of any kind, and they wait until it's bad.
Yeah.
Whereas like, it's okay to go when you actually you're feeling kind of okay,
yeah.
but it just gets you a plan and it makes sure you know you have someone to talk to, and it keeps you, I think, at a solid level.
In one of my sessions, I was telling my therapist, I was like, I just hope to make it to 40. I know most people don't want to turn 40, but like, I look at that as a huge celebration.
And that's the reality of it, right? Like,
yeah.
I want to, because every birthday is a blessing. Like, every birthday is a privilege. You get to turn 40.
Exactly. And like, even like this past birthday, I was like, yeah, I'm turning 33, but I'm so happy to be turning 33.
Yeah. It's definitely a different perspective.
Yeah. And I've been seeing her for over a year at this point.
Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, there are days where I'm like, I feel good enough. Yeah. Like, I don't need to see her, but yeah. like, I do want to see her.
Yeah. It's just like the maintenance part yeah. of it. Yeah. And so as we use this label survivor, do you consider yourself a survivor?
I feel like I'm still in that, so like, I don't want to call myself that yet.
Yeah.
More of a thriver.
Yeah.
How I view it is like, because I'm still in the thick of treatment, I view it as, let's celebrate each treatment being done.
Like the treatment milestones.
Yeah.
Which I think is another very important aspect mm-hmm. that I'm glad you brought up. Because a lot of people also think just it's ringing the bell at the very end yeah. of treatment and like it's that or nothing. And so I love when people incorporate like every part of that as a milestone. Going through surgery.
Oh my gosh.
Weeks of radiation. Honestly, like you could ring the bell every week like that yeah. you're completing. But every different, you know, chemo regimen, every different clinical trial, those are all huge milestones. And I think we sometimes celebrate milestones in our life, but like not in the cancer treatment world. And so I love that you mentioned that and that you do see those as the milestones to kind of celebrate and mark what's going on.
Like I kind of also, even with chemo, so my chemo treatment is a pill. Parks of my cancer, it's a pill
yeah.
form.
Yeah.
And it's for 5 nights. Every 28 days. And after each treatment, I'm kind of like, I deserve a little treat.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I just
absolutely.
Finished chemo.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that, like, those are the things that, it's not the race, I guess, but it's yeah. like you run a marathon, right? So it's like every, you still have to get to every yeah, mile, right?
Exactly.
And so it's like these are the mile markers that are kind of yeah. getting you there. So Thriver feels good to you. Mm-hmm. So not quite at the Survivor yet. So thinking back, big picture about your cancer experience, what advice would you give to other cancer survivors or cancer patients who are still in the thick of treatment or survivorship?
Do whatever makes you happy. You still got to live your life. Like if you want to lay in bed and watch Bravo all day, do it. That's what I did when I was exhausted.
Yeah.
And I still do it. I'm obsessed with Bravo.
Yeah.
Also, like still like try to live your best life by going out to dinner, seeing your friends to like the limits that you can do.
Yeah.
Go to that football game. Go to that concert. My biggest thing was I wanted to make it to an Alabama football game, which I did. And I did cry at my first one just knowing that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then I also saw Beyonce, Cowboy Carter. Listening to her, to that album has helped me through my treatments.
Yeah.
I would listen to that on the way to radiation. I also listened to that during my MRIs. It's just kind of that feel good moment. Another thing is I like to dress up for my appointments. I just want to bring sparkle and sunshine here.
Yeah, what do they call it? It's like dressing in dopamine, or it's like the dopamine of like, even if you don't feel it, like you fake it and just
exactly.
like put a headband on, put an extra scarf on, put your favorite shoes on, like whatever it is to just like get you to the next
yeah.
point, which kind of makes me think big picture of like goal setting. Like it sounds like you just had these very certain things of like, I want to get to an Alabama game.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to a SoulCycle.
Yeah.
It was the goal setting of like, okay, I know I got there and that's what made you feel maybe joy in a sense of at a
time. It also
time
made me
doing...
forget about what my real reality is.
Is that also where social media is helpful to sort of not forget and not distract
yeah.
from? Because I actually think some people use social media to process what they're going through. But so is that kind of what came to play for you?
Yes, to kind of process and just to like put it out there, because I knew a lot of people are reaching out to me, and I also figured that was just the easier platform for me just to get everything out there. And I have heard from a lot of people from my high school, from my hometown in Birmingham, and just people in Atlanta just reaching out saying, hey, I've been seeing your posts and just want to let you know I'm thinking and praying for you.
Yeah.
And that just makes me feel really good.
Yeah. Because is that kind of the hope and the goal
yeah.
for the content that you're putting out there?
That and just educating people on brain cancer too. Especially if someone who gets diagnosed with cancer and they look at me, they're like, okay, she's fine. Like, I know I can get through it.
Yeah.
That's why I put a lot of stuff out there too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it is scary to hear the word brain surgery. The main thing I was concerned about was my hair. My husband had all the questions to ask my surgeon and see with my parents, and then it goes, do you have any questions for me? And I go, what's my hair situation going to be like?
Yeah. But I think that's a very appropriate question for a young adult to ask. It's like, it's not superficial. Like, this really is the concern of, like, this could impact me. And I think people talk about this about, like, well, I have to go on job interviews, or like, I am still dating, or I just want to look like myself. And so, you know, I can get through anything, but I want to be able to recognize myself in the mirror. And so, you know, I guess the big concept here is body image, but knowing how it will really impact like your day to day life and what your body image is, like, your hair is a huge part of that. And so I don't think it's an insignificant thing. Like, it really does matter to people. And I know sometimes the response is like, well, you can wear a wig. Well, you can wear a headband. Well, you can go bald. You look great. But like, none of that's the point. The point is, it's not you, and it doesn't look like you. It doesn't feel like you. And so it's helpful to know, what do I expect, and what can I prepare for?
The day of my surgery, my hair was down to here.
Wow.
And then after surgery, I had a haircut, and I was like, screw it, that post-wedding cut.
Yeah.
I cut it to here, and then I kept getting shorter and shorter. And my surgery, I call it my surgery hair, was growing in. It's still like long, and I was like, screw it, let's just like chop my hair to kind of make it a little more even. But now my radiation hair is growing in. It's all crazy. But that's also another reason I like to dress up for my appointments. Gotta look good, feel good. And it's just that sense of internal feeling of like, I may not feel good, but I wanna look good.
It's an internal satisfaction because I think there is this point of like, hair comes in different colors, hair comes in different textures. And I don't mean like people have those. Yes, different people have different hairstyles, but no, the same person can have different hair colors, different hair textures. Sometimes they go from straight to curly, and then sometimes it's just thin, or it breaks and it's wonky and it's uneven. So all of those things that like one patient can experience. And so they've spent their whole life figuring out how to do their own hair. Yeah. Only for the color to change or the texture to change. Mm-hmm. And so again, like, it doesn't feel like them. And it's a whole new learning curve on top of like, I'm still learning how to live in my body. I'm still learning how to get back to running half marathons. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like figuring out my hair again.
I was in a wedding in August. It was my cousin's wedding. I was her maid of honor. That was the first time I felt myself slash pretty since my own wedding. I think that's also why I've been buying a lot more makeup at Sephora, just to make me feel even better, too. My husband's like, you've got to stop it at Sephora.
But sometimes, like, you control what you can control, right? And so it's like, sometimes if it's skincare, if it's clothes you're wearing, if it's makeup you're putting on, if it's the way you're doing your hair, like, if it makes you feel good, like, you have to hang on to those things that make you feel good. And it sounds like,
and that's what some of those cancer Instagram accounts like say. They're like, if you want to do something to make you feel good, do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, those little pieces of celebrating every milestone of the treatments, of taking care of yourself the best you can, or not taking care of yourself if you can at that moment, but just kind of knowing what that looks like for you and adapting accordingly, because it is a roller coaster and things change so much throughout the entire experience.
Because even when I'm doing chemo, I'm either in my pajamas or in a sweatshirt and sweatpants. So like, out of the 21 days of the 5 days, I just want to look good.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And anything else that you would want people to know, or any advice that you would give to other survivors?
Use the AYA sources.
Especially
if you're a young adult. Take that to full advantage. I just remember after my surgery, maybe 2 weeks later, I was getting all these appointments set up through the AYA system. And I was just like, okay, I'll do therapy. Yeah. I'll take this genetic call. Because like, also genetic, like, to go through the whole genetic process is also a big factor.
Obviously, I'm very biased because it's the program I work with and I love it so much. But that really is the goal. It's like, when patients come in, they don't always know what they don't know. Yeah. They don't know what questions to ask. No. They don't know what's available and what's not. And so ideally, when they're coming through the young adult clinic, we can say, we got you. Mm-hmm. And here's what we're looking at. Here's all the services. And so patients can start from the beginning, or they can say, I don't know, I got a lot going on right now. Yeah. Like, let's, you know, pump this down the road a little bit. But the goal is to talk about fertility very early on, to talk about work and school, talk about the mental health, the relationships, the genetic aspects, nutrition, just all the components that go into it. And so wherever people are in that process and whatever they're ready for, obviously, like, the goal is to just get patients connected.
For sure.
Well, Hannah, this is such a good conversation. I feel like we could just keep talking about all the elements forever. But so just thanks for joining us today, and thanks for being vulnerable and sharing all your experiences.
Thanks for having me. And again, I'm an open book because I just want to help the person behind me.
I love that. And thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to comment or review. For more information or to request an appointment, call 1-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877 632-6789 or visit mdanderson.org. Thanks for listening to the CancerWise podcast from UT MD Anderson.